This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Joe Palca in for Ira Flatow. The news media has been giving a lot of attention lately to the nuclear intentions of Iran and North Korea. Less attention is being paid to the U.S. nuclear arsenal. But big changes are afoot in this country. For the first time in two decades, the United States is planning to build a new nuclear bomb. Two national labs, Los Alamos and Lawrence Livermore, are competing for the right to build what's called the Reliable Replacement Warhead. The new weapon would replace the country's aging nuclear stockpile. But here's the catch. Under the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, these new bombs can't actually be tested. So the question is, can you build a reliable bomb without testing it? Proponents say yes, because the technology being used has been tested and proven successful. Critics say that's wishful thinking, and they say building new bombs could lead to a new nuclear arms race. This hour, we'll discuss the pros and cons of the Reliable Replacement Warhead program and the technical and political challenges it faces. If you'd like to join our discussion, give us a call. The number is 800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. And if you want more information about what we'll be talking about this hour, go to our website at www.sciencefriday.com, where you'll find links to our topic. And now let me introduce my guests. Ambassador C. Paul Robinson was the head of the U.S. delegation to the U.S.-USSR nuclear testing talks in Geneva from 1988 to 1990, and he was the director of Sandia National Laboratories in Albuquerque, New Mexico from 1995 to 2005. He joins me today by phone from Boulder, Colorado. Welcome to the program, Dr. Robinson.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And here in Studio 3A, there's Robert W. Nelson. He's a senior scientist at the Union of Concerned Scientists and a visiting member of the research staff in the Program on Science and Global Security at Princeton University in New Jersey. Welcome to the program, Dr. Nelson.
I'm pleased to be here.
And finally, also here in Studio 3A, Jeff Brumfield. He's the physical sciences correspondent at Nature in Washington, D.C. He's the author of a news story on reliable replacement warheads in the current issue of the journal Nature. He's here in the studio, and he joins me. And so, again, we'd like to encourage you to join us, and we'll be talking about this for the next little while. It's 800-989-8255. And, Jeff Brumfield, maybe we can start with you. I mean, why now? Why has this reliable replacement program come up now?
Right. Well, Joe, the reason is really because the stockpile that we have, which is about 10,000 nuclear warheads, is aging. We quit producing warheads over a decade ago, I believe. And since then, basically, the ones that we have are just getting older. And the scientists who maintain them are concerned that as they age, they're going to become somehow less reliable.
And how so? I mean, what makes a bomb stop being reliable?
Well, the principal concern is around what's called the pit. And this is a piece of the bomb that's usually made of a nuclear material such as plutonium-239. And the pit of weapons can degrade over time, in part because it can oxidize or rust. I mean, normal aging processes. But also, the radiation can, over time, sort of change the nature of it.
I got it. Okay, maybe I can turn to you, Paul Robinson, and ask, what are we talking about here with this reliable replacement program? What is it supposed to do?
Well, it arose in a funny manner. Unlike any of the design challenges we faced in the nuclear community before, people ask the question, is it possible to have a design that can be maintained and that will not require periodic nuclear testing, as the previous stockpile had required throughout 60 years of prior history? The idea that emerged is just as the biological analogy of genetic diversity. Rather than betting on just one design for a particular warhead, suppose you built a fraction of those warheads with the existing design, and you built another fraction with a different design that is somewhat simpler, one that has been previously tested, however, and that would be easier to maintain by the tools we now rely on, the science-based stockpile stewardship tools. That idea finally moved forward with a weapon that wouldn't require testing and was given the name RRW.
I see. Now, but how, I mean, how concerned are we that the current stockpile won't work?
Well, I was concerned enough that in the 1999 testimony for a comprehensive test ban, it was my recommendation that we not ratify the treaty because we could not be sure that our weapons would work in the present regime. We then committed to a year-by-year analysis to determine whether or not a test is required, and that's the regime we've been on year by year. And so far, we haven't required a test, but there's no guarantee that you would not require such a test. This is an approach that I think has great possibilities to maintain an enduring stockpile, but without nuclear testing.
Okay, well, maybe I can turn to you, Robert Nelson. We haven't actually ratified that test ban treaty, have we?
That's correct. In 1999, the Senate failed to give its consent to ratify the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, but it's been in a sort of legal limbo since then because it still sits at the Senate's desk and has not been returned to President Bush, for example. So we are still a signatory to the treaty, and we still agree to abide by the moratorium on testing, which we haven't done since 1992, despite the fact that we have not ratified the treaty.
Okay. So is it a mistake not to ratify the treaty, or do we need to be able to test weapons in order to reassure ourselves that the weapons we have are working?
Well, that is a very long story. I certainly believe that we should have ratified the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty in 1999. It was a real disaster, in my opinion. But let me just go back to the Reliable Replacement Warhead Program. As a scientist, I have to say that it absolutely makes no sense, the idea that we would replace and try to certify new weapons that have never been tested and replace them with our existing stockpile that is based on over 1,000 nuclear tests. It's potentially dangerous because ultimately it's going to force us to resume nuclear testing again, and the public should insist that Congress withdraw funding for this program and kill it before it grows any bigger.
Go ahead. Paul Robinson, do you want to comment on
that? Yeah, if I could jump in there. It's incorrect to say that you're drawing on designs that were not part of the previous 1,000 tests. That's the very basis of the program, is to select designs that were very well tested previously so they do not have to be tested subsequently.
Well, let me ask you, Paul Robinson, do you think that the tests, I mean, was there ever a test where a bomb failed to go off, for example, after it was designed?
Of course. There are notable failures in a number of systems over the years, and very much was spent to try and uncover the reasons for those failures and corrections made. But it is that uncertainty with what is our primary national security weapon that caused many of us to say, look, even though we can pledge to do our best not to have a nuclear test, we can't be sure that one would not be required. This is now a new approach to try and get out of that pickle, to move to a regime that would be far less likely to ever require another nuclear test.
Okay. Let's take a call now and see what our listeners have to do with to feel about this. And let's go to Peter in Albany, California. Peter, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for your program. I worked briefly at Los Alamos, actually in one of the groups that's associated with the design. And I'm wondering, to what degree do you suppose part of this is being driven by a need to have these people have something to work on? You've got a lot of aging designers who are retiring, and they need to train a new workforce of people who are capable.
Yeah, well, let's ask Jeff Brumfield. He's talked to a lot of people in the course of writing an article about this.
I think Peter has a very good point, and this is an argument made by the National Nuclear Security Administration, which manages the nuclear stockpile. They say that the existing designers are getting close to retirement and they need a new generation, and they've been pushing for some time to be able to design a new warhead so as to train up the next generation.
So maybe Robert Nelson, I mean, is there any fungibility in the knowledge that, you know, that somebody who built a weapon 20 years ago is just as capable of building one today and can pass that knowledge on, or is it a new learning curve each time?
Well, you have to remember that we froze in place the designs that we had at the end of the Cold War. In fact, one of the problems that the nuclear weapons laboratories have today is because they're not allowed after 1992 to design new weapons, and they're not allowed to test new weapons, and they're unsatisfied with that. And therefore, after losing things like the Nuclear Earth Penetrator Program, their latest idea is that they should rebuild the nuclear stockpile. And let me just say, they are trying to certify a new weapon, unlike what they've ever done before, without conducting a nuclear test with the final weapon. And as Jeff quoted in his Nature article, Harold Agnew, the former director of Los Alamos Laboratories, that the whole idea is simply ludicrous, that you could put a new weapon into the stockpile without testing it.
Hmm. But is your argument then that we need to just keep the current stockpile going, or
that's absolutely correct? Our current stockpile is highly reliable, which Dr. Robinson will have to acknowledge because he signs the annual certification memoranda every year on every nuclear weapon that gets
handed up. Oh, is that in his role
Defense
Science Board?
As his previous role as a director of Sandia Labs, each of the three directors of the nuclear weapons laboratories have signed statements saying that the current nuclear stockpile is safe, secure, and reliable. And in fact, there is no evidence that the current stockpile is anything but highly reliable.
Okay. Well, Dr. Robinson, before you answer, I'm going to let you have a chance, but I'm afraid we have to take a short break now. But I promise when we come back from this, we'll let you have a full response to that comment. We're talking about the Reliable Replacement Warhead Program, and we're taking your calls, so stay with us. From NPR News, this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Joe Palca. We're talking about this hour about the Reliable Replacement Warhead Program. It's a plan to build a reliable new nuclear bomb without actually having to test it. My guests are Robert W. Nelson. He's a senior scientist at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Jeff Brumfiel, a physical sciences correspondent at Nature magazine in Washington, who's just written an article about this topic. And Ambassador C. Paul Robinson, former director of the Sandia National Laboratories in Albuquerque. And Paul Robinson, you were about to comment on Robert Nelson's suggestion that the current stockpile is safe and reliable.
Well, let me remind the listeners that nuclear weapons, particularly U.S. nuclear weapons, are the most complex and highly engineered devices that I think have ever been created. They are also the most quality-assured product in history. Many levels of independent reviews, and all of that work is carried out by men and women who also age 1 year per year, just like the stockpile. Mm. We've had lots of experience over the 60-plus years of the U.S. nuclear weapons program in training people and introducing them to new technologies and passing the torch from one generation to another. That's a part of the RRW, but that work goes on whether we built RRW or not. Those people are the ones who carry out the year-by-year quality assurance to look for a problem in each weapon in the stockpile each and every year. And it's that continuing process that we're worried as time progresses, everything does age and problems will arise, and we need to break out of that aging regimen into something that we can assure for the long term, but again, without carrying out nuclear tests.
Okay, Robert Nelson.
And I would just say that Dr. Robinson did not say that the current stockpile is unreliable, because it isn't.
It's
very reliable.
Year, it was certified reliable again.
As it has for every year for the last 10 years.
Right, but I guess we're looking into the future. But let's see what some of our listeners have to say about this, and let's go to Roger in San Francisco. Are you there?
Yes, I'm right here.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I believe that our country is moving into a very dangerous mode. You know, it started when this administration decided to abandon the anti-ballistic missile treaty. Now, this was a signed treaty. Everyone agreed it was a good thing. Everybody also knows that it's not effective against a country like Russia, who could launch hundreds of missiles. We seem to be going in a direction, a very militarist direction, that is going to instill fear in a lot of nations out there. And there is nothing worse than instilling fear in countries like Russia or China, countries that are capable of establishing a strong nuclear attack force.
Okay, Roger,
so
let me get
some, in the wrong direction.
Let me get some thoughts on that. It's an interesting point. Robert Nelson, what is our nuclear stockpile here for now? I mean, it was built at a time when there was a perceived threat from the Soviet Union, but that's gone. So,
well, that's the debate that we really should be having. This is really an irrational discussion about whether or not our current stockpile is 99% reliable versus 90% reliable, when we still have roughly 10,000 nuclear warheads in the U.S. stockpile. Now, in about a month, we'll have the 61st anniversary of the Hiroshima bombing, and I think most Americans can picture in their mind some image, some horrific image of the Hiroshima bombing. But every nuclear weapon in the U.S. stockpile has an explosive energy between 10 to 80 times the energy of the Hiroshima weapon. And we still have 10,000 weapons in the arsenal, 5,000 which are deployed on active weapons. Not only that, but we still have an operational thermonuclear warfighting plan that, if launched, could still kill 500 million people in 30 minutes. That's the kind of debate we should be having, and we didn't have it after the end of the Cold War.
All right. Let's take another call now and go to James in Paducah, Kentucky. Welcome to the program.
Oh, yes. Do we know if China or any of the other nuclear club members, I guess India or any of them, are they testing theirs for reliability? And how would we know if they weren't? I mean, I guess we wouldn't know for sure if they...
Well, Jeff Brumfield, do you have a perspective on that?
Yes. At the moment, I believe, and Rob or Paul will correct me if I'm wrong on this, but my understanding is that nobody is testing right now. And the British are very actively engaged in the same sort of stockpile stewardship activity we are. The Russians have a parallel program. In fact, seismic networks are good enough these days that it's generally believed we could detect any sort of significant nuclear underground test anywhere in the world. And in fact, in the late 90s, when India and Pakistan tested their weapons, we were able to detect those quite easily.
Okay, James, thanks very much for that call. Let's go to Larry in Hartford, Connecticut. Larry, welcome to the program.
Hi. My question is... Given that we don't have control over advancements in other countries of the world, then if they make certain advances in the nuclear weaponry over our current state of the art, so to speak, then wouldn't we be behind the eight ball, so to speak, if we have our current stockpile with less enhanced weapons. The reason I mention it is because I was also reading a CRS report for Congress by Jonathan Medaglia. And on page 52, the claim was, and I haven't verified this, that as of February 2006, Los Alamos and the Livermore staff claimed that they're confident that designs will meet military requirements and will not require nuclear testing to certify. That's for the RRW. So that's the other aspect of the question in terms of the testing.
Interesting point. Robert Nelson, what do you think?
Well, let me just go back to the first issue. The whole reason why it was advantageous for the United States to sign the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty is because we have an incredible advantage over other countries in the world. Our weapons are far more sophisticated and advanced than almost anybody else's. And the whole point, you know, we've conducted over 1,000 nuclear tests. The Chinese conducted a little over 40. And by freezing the nuclear weapons designs, by preventing them from conducting tests, we prevented the Chinese from advancing their technology and, for example, miniaturizing their warheads and MIRVing them to be put able to put many warheads on the same missile.
Right. Paul Robinson?
Well, certainly I don't think we had a motive to freeze the technology and freeze in place an advantage, nor should we ever be comfortable that such a regimen could occur. I believe that we were trying as best we could to lower the level of focus on nuclear weapons, and we spend a lot of effort today on non-proliferation, but I think you only have to read the headlines to see that we're not completely successful. North Korea, Iran are certainly engaged in the fight. We know the nuclear club has grown beyond the five to double the number of nations that have nuclear weapons. It's a continuing concern, I think, for the future. The treaty always had legal breakouts as well as illegal breakouts as a possibility. So in planning for the nation's defense, you've got to consider both possibilities.
Jeff Brumfield, you wanted to comment.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that one of the rather odd characteristics of the RRW is that in many ways it's actually a step backwards in technology. One of the things that the designers are emphasizing is that they will be using aspects of old designs from, you know, the 60s and 70s. So actually this will be an older weapon in some sense, but more dependable, or so the argument goes.
Paul Robinson, well, go ahead. Did you want to comment on
that? Certainly the current stockpile is a very highly tuned a set of designs to maximize the number of warheads that could be carried and thereby minimize the weight of any single warhead. Relaxing those constraints for the changed world we're in, which there is in general less reliance on nuclear weapons around the world at the current time, is a good thing for us to relax those design requirements and get weapons that are more reliable over the long term.
This discussion makes me wonder, maybe Paul Robinson and I can address this to you, about how obviously there for obviously very good reasons there's secrecy associated with the nature of the designs that these various labs are coming up with. But it does begin to raise the question of, you know, whether an independent oversight, if such a thing were even possible, would vet the concepts. I mean, obviously, both Lawrence Livermore and Los Alamos have a strong interest in seeing these things come to pass because the labs are very dependent on the weapons activities. But how can we have this discussion in the climate of secrecy that's required?
Well, unfortunately, the details, I believe, will always have to remain secret. We don't want to teach others how to build nuclear weapons, nor possibly reveal any vulnerabilities that might exist within our own designs. And so we do our best to keep the material secret. But within the secrecy constraints, there are such independent reviews that are continuously held. And I'm pleased to say now all of the national labs have moved to a board of directors-like structure where about half the members of the board of directors are people chosen not to represent any other entity but the nation in these debates, and to give an independent evaluation to the work that's carried out in these laboratories.
Jeff Brumfield, you wanted to add to that.
Yeah, I was going to say that one sort of independent review that's been proposed by Congressman David Hobson, who oversees the labs for the Congress, is having a group of independent but cleared scientists, that is, scientists that can do top-secret work, called the JASENS, conduct a review in the coming year. And it will be very interesting if that review goes forward to see any sort of unclassified report they might produce about this program.
Yes, Robert Nelson.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the JASENS, because in 1995, after a thorough study of the whole proposal for maintaining the stockpile without testing. The Jasons endorsed the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, and that committee included, for example, Seymour Sack, who's a weapons designer at Livermore, probably responsible for most of the primaries in our weapons. But they said one thing, and that is we can maintain a reliable and safe nuclear stockpile as long as we don't try to change it. It's when we make design changes that we can't test that you're going to decrease the confidence in the reliability of the weapons we have. And that's why people like myself and Harold Agnew and Seymour Sack think this is going down the road where we will have to resume underground nuclear testing.
We're talking about the reliable replacement warhead program that's currently underway in two national labs to build a new nuclear bomb. I'm Joe Palca, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Paul Robinson, did you want to add something to that?
Let me add just to your last comment. All three national labs are involved. Sandia, which teams with either Los Alamos or Lawrence Livermore for the weaponization effort and the final engineering design, has been working to add a new generation of security and control features that are appropriate to this post-9/11 world that we live in. Now, those are elements that do not interact strongly with the nuclear package, but there are additional things that need to be done when any set of changes are made. I would also emphasize that what RRW is about is going back to proven designs, designs that operate well away from any margins that we've discovered in past tests to give us the highest probability of being reliable over the long term.
Okay, I think we have time for one more call. Let's go to Jeff in Jacksonville, Florida. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, as a former bomb disposal officer in the Navy, and as I'm recalling some design issues, the only real... The technology for the boom itself, for the nuclear explosion itself, isn't that tough. It's everything leading up to it that's an issue. So you can test the system completely up to the detonators without it ever being a question of reliability. You can get a pretty much 99.9% reliability test without actually having a nuclear explosion.
So what about that? Well, can I ask Paul Robinson to respond to that?
Yeah, he is exactly correct. The non-nuclear components can be tested and are continuously tested, and the annual stockpile certification, which I've been signing for 10 years, indeed do include all of that information and the result of the non-nuclear test to guarantee that all those other parts do function. The 1992 decision was to eliminate any nuclear yield testing, but everything ahead of that is tested.
Okay. Robert Nelson, I guess you would argue that's why we don't...
Yeah, that's why we don't need to build new weapons, because the stockpile is reliable. It's not broken. Don't fix it.
I wish it were true.
Okay. Well, maybe we should turn to you, Jeff Brumfield, to sort of tie all this up. Obviously, you had, in the preparation of this article, a lot of people that you talked to. What's the balance out there? Is it 50-50 on this, or are more people favoring the reliable weapons program than are opposed?
Oh, well, geez, I wish I
knew.
Well,
you're the honest broker here. You're a journalist. We have to believe you.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Well, I think it very much depends on the community, to be honest with you. I think that there are people in the nuclear weapons community, former designers I talked to, who have real substantial concerns about the long-term prospects of maintaining weapons. But I should say that in most cases we're talking about 40 or 50 years out, so, you know, 30 years from now maybe, if most weapons are around 20 years old. On the other side, people like Rob, people in the arms control community think this is obviously a terrible idea. And I'd say there's no real unified opinion out there.
Okay, well, I'm afraid that's where we're going to have to leave things. Gentlemen, thank you all very much for joining me. I'd like to thank Jeff Brumfield. He's a physical sciences correspondent for the journal Nature. Ambassador C. Paul Robinson is the head of the U.S. delegation to the U.S.-USSR nuclear testing talks in Geneva from 1988 to 1990, and a former director of Sandia National Laboratories. And finally, Robert W. Nelson, senior scientist at the Union of Concerned Scientists and visiting member of the research staff in the Program on Science and Global Security at Princeton University. When we come back from a short break, we'll start talking about wildfires and why there's so many of them and why the wildfire season is lasting so long. So stay with us.